We are resuming with our meeting, which was adjourned before lunch. As per the agenda, we have to welcome our colleagues from the Department of Education in KwaZulu-Natal in a similar manner as we did with the Gauteng province. They are here to give us an update on feedback on implementation of the recommendation of the oversight visit that we undertook in KwaZulu-Natal at the beginning of the year. I think it was in King Kachwayo district. So I would give the members an opportunity to introduce themselves, because at that time when we went to KZN, Dr. Nzama was not yet appointed the HOD. So many of us, we don't know each other. And then we also have new members in our portfolio. So I will start by introducing myself. My name is Pinky Mokoto. I'm the whip of the committee, currently acting as the chairperson. Our chairperson is on sick leave since the accident that affected our committee, and we lost one of the members. Members, can we introduce ourselves?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Joyce Voiswa Bafon, the member of the Basic Education Committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lamalan Khosa, member of the committee.
My name is Ian Ollis. I'm one of the newer members of the committee. I'm going to have to leave early, but I wasn't on this KZN oversight trip because I'm a new member. I've only recently joined, but thank you for the welcome.
Dr. Nzama, I give off to introduce your...
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Vosmos Nzama. I work as Head of Department for Education in KwaZulu-Natal. I'm accompanied by a colleague, Mr. Lakim Tetwa, who is also a manager in the Office of the Head of Department. Thank you.
Yes, DBE.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Sihle Mlambo. I'm Chief Director responsible for Provincial Monitoring. I'm accompanying the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Education. And I must apologize also for the absence of the Director General. Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I'm not sure, Chair, whether I should just continue to pass over to the department.
Okay, since you are the relevant person from the DBE, we know that in the previous meeting you were in charge, so you can continue with your responsibilities.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable members, as usual and as always, the DPE welcomes an opportunity to interact with the committee and in their exercise of oversight, which is very critical. And today, therefore, the committee has requested to meet with the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Education in response to your previous visit, oversight visit in the province. Dr. Nzama is the SG, as he has already indicated, as a head of department. He is representing the province and will give his responses to the issues that were raised during the visit. I will then hand it over back to him. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleague from DBE, Mr. Mlambo. Honorable members, honorable chair, let me first thank the opportunity given to us as the Department of Education from KZN to come and respond and update members on the progress made in relation to the findings by members in the district of King Gojayo, KZN. We would want to thank the opportunity. The Portfolio Committee on Basic Education conducted an oversight visit to KZN, having considered the issues that were highlighted, requested that the Minister of Basic Education ensures that the department considers certain recommendations as responded to. I hope all the documents that are already in the possession of honorable members are the one that I'm also utilizing in my response to the questions raised. I'm going to follow the presentation there, but at the same time, the same presentation is documented in a document that looks like this. Honorable Chair, first slide. The first question is related to, it stands as follows. KwaZulu-Natal Provincial Education Department had to investigate the question of religious discrimination of learners at certain schools and ensure that this is addressed. Yes, as a department, we conducted this investigation in the whole province of KwaZulu-Natal, because there were strong allegations that learners are being discriminated, and there are these various forms of discrimination in schools. And this affected heavily the learners who are coming from, who are belonging to the Nazareth Church, who were forced to cut hairs and also remove moustaches. This was reported to the MEC, Honorable MEC Dungwane and myself. And we first met the leadership of the Nazareth Church. After a long engagement, then we decided to cover the whole province, to check in all 12 districts as to what extent are these learners affected. And we discovered that it is true they are discriminated. On the basis of that, the findings confirmed that they are being discriminated on a daily basis. We then issued a circular to schools, circular to all schools, circular number 20 of 2017, and KZN circular number 73 of 2016. They are attached to this presentation for perusal. And the circular, both circulars pointed to the fact that principal did not have a right to do what they did, and that both circulars inform schools to comply with the Bill of Rights and respecting the human rights as entrenched in the Constitution, and that the SGBs were advised to revisit their individual school policies, because sometimes these school policies are contrary to the Constitution. As a result, both circulars addressed that, just to ensure that SGBs do not contradict the South African Schools Act, and that was addressed in terms of those two circulars. They are attached, and I'm sure they are available for perusal. That's the first question we address as a Department of Education. And also this affected other religious denominations like the Muslims, though that was also communicated. We had to do all that and to see to it that that this is dealt with at provincial level, so that in all 12 districts the information is communicated or disseminated. Then the second issue was in relation to the fact that the KZN province and to ensure that vacancies at every level in the system be identified and filled as a matter of urgency, and the processes of filling of vacancies be accelerated. Yeah, that at the time of visits, I must admit there were lots of vacancies in the form of teacher vacancies, in the form of vacancies for subject advisors and circuit managers. I was new at that time, but we prioritized that. And the filling of posts, as I'm talking now, there is not even a single school that is without a teacher. All 90,057 posts are fully utilized, to the extent of exceeding the limit, because we have to provide for substitutes as well, provide for other special needs, schools with special needs. So school-based posts are taken care of. So those posts are filled. Where there is, I must admit that there are areas where we have not yet been able to fill posts. Areas like subject advisors and circuit managers, SMS posts as well. This is on the basis that we currently limited by the fact that there are austerity measures in the province, where you have to seek permission from Premier to and through Treasury to get permission for the post to be filled. So we tried to fill the remaining post in all schools that in support systems, that is the post of subject advisors and circuit managers. We are not being able to fill all of them right now because of financial constraints. And the argument is that in the case they are filled, we won't be able to sustain those posts. But posts that are school-based are all filled, not even a single school that is without. The only problem is with the subject advisors post that are filled incrementally because of financial constraints and the circuit managers post. Currently, we have established that we have about 535 vacancies for principals, and we have developed a bulletin. We are advertising those posts. Probably before the end of the year, we'll release an advert for 535 posts. We have sought permission, and we have been authorized by the provincial government to advertise 535 posts for principals and close to 200 posts for heads of department and less than 200 posts for deputy directors. So anything that has to do with schools, be it level 1 post, level 2 HOD, deputy principals, as well as the principal's post, are filled without any delay. So therefore, the principal's post are going to be released now. The way we are experiencing problems is on the question of subject advisory services as well as second management post. But that's the area that we are looking at in terms of prioritizing funding beginning of 2018. Then the third question that came up is on the question of KZNPD ensures that schools who reported shortages of textbooks and workbooks be supplied with these as a matter of urgencies. I remember that when honorable members visited schools at the time, especially although it affected all districts, but King's Lateral District, the evidence was there that certain schools did not have adequate textbooks as at the time. That has been addressed because the schools that did not have books, am I correct? Yes. That the schools that did not have books had to be audited to establish on the cost implications in the case those books are provided. Fortunately, we were able to procure those books centrally, and the schools were supplied, we were able to also identify schools with surplus textbooks, and we had to remove those surplus textbooks in order to compensate those schools that did not have adequate textbooks. So evidence is there that and as a result, the schools that fall under Section 21C status, where the department is only sort of transfer funds and allow those schools to purchase textbooks on their own, most of those schools have been asked to also procure centrally at provincial level to enable the department to sort of buy books for them, because the problem that we are facing as departments, the Department of Education, is that Section 21 schools with C status, once funds are transferred, they are kept in school accounts or used for something else. As a result, the school ends up not having all textbooks. Not because the department did not provide financially. It does provide, but the principal, once he sees money into the school account, he then decides not to purchase books or to purchase textbooks on his own at a high price compared to procuring centrally. So, but in relation to this question that is being raised under 3 here, to ensure that schools have textbooks, that we have addressed this insufficiency of textbooks, especially in a school, Matamzana Dube High School, and other schools that were identified within the same district of King Kedwayo. So this is now a matter that has been addressed. I'm not saying all schools have 100%, sitting at 100%, but I'm saying it was addressed on the basis of the fact that we had money to procure and to make sure that textbooks are purchased centrally and schools are supplied. We have done that. That Okay. I'm just checking something here, if I'm not leaving anything out. In a school called Matamzana, there was also a query as to why, maybe I have to address this, as to why the school did not have books at the time of members' arrival. We discovered that. We conducted an investigation. Because when you arrived there, there were no books. Although we decided to buy books later on for those schools. But we discovered that the school had was in possession of about 184 million. Funds that had been transferred into the school account, and that the principal never even thought decided to buy books for his school. And that also later on in 2016, it also investigation revealed that there was money that the department transferred to that particular school, and the principal did not purchase books. And as a result, we took a decision to have the school procured centrally and then stop transferring money to the school because of the behavior of principal. And this is a practice in a number of schools where money is transferred to a school and the principal doesn't purchase books. So I wanted to respond to this question because it, at the time of visit, it was as if the department did not attend to the problem of not having books, of the problem of that the school was facing. So I must confirm that it's the principal, but we ended up correcting that by coercing the school to procure centrally in order to avoid this tendency of keeping the allocation and the funds for something else. Then the question that followed was the question of collaboration with the National Department of Education that consider and review the subject streaming combination of subjects for affected schools in an effort to streamline the process. I must admit that there are schools that have low enrollment, but with three streams, science, math, and accounting or commercial subjects. The question is, what if there are 60 learners, maybe 50 or 45 or 38 learners in matric, grade 12 or grade 10, 11, and 12, who are, and they take different streams, but the enrollment is small, the tendency is that you end up looking and had to provide more teachers because of the number of streams in a small school or in a school with small enrollment. The question is, why are we not reducing and restreaming the school in order to reduce the number of streams that are there, that are existing in a school? The issue is, we discourage schools, especially with low enrollment, from putting or having three or lots of streams. For one reason, that it's not a value. It's a value to a child, but in terms of the supply, teacher supply, you end up supplying, exceeding the post-provisioning norm that is designed for that particular school in terms of the number of learners. Because the problem with PPN, it doesn't look at the number of streams, it doesn't look at the number of subjects, it looks at the number of learners. So that the allocation is based on that. That is the policy. Now the question is, the school with smaller enrollment has to be assisted and be requested to reduce the number of streams. We do that. But the only way to assist the school is to channel the school at the level of grade 9, where learners have to make a choice, subject packages, so that you limit the stream at grade 9. When they make decisions to package subjects, they don't take all three streams because of the numbers. You then start there. But if already there are learners in grade 10 or in grade 11 who are already in those three streams, you allow another 2 years for those who are in grade 10, grade 11 to complete their program. So meaning which the whole program of restreaming takes another 2 years, it becomes incremental gradually because you have to consider those that are already in grade 10, those in grade 11, and make sure that they are not disadvantaged. So this has been addressed, it's being addressed, but it doesn't take place within a short space of time because of what I've just explained, that it awaits at least those that are in grade 10 have to be allowed to proceed up to grade 12. Even if there are 24 in different streams, in three streams, we will have to allow that. You can't change it at that level from grade 10 upwards. But those that are coming from grade 9 can be easily channeled and they be able to reduce streams and make sure that there is control in terms of the number of streams at school level. Because if you don't do that, you end up with a problem of not having adequate posts for those streams. So streamlining takes into account the enrollment of each school and the availability of resources. So that's why it's important that you have to be very careful to first look at your enrollment, look at the resources you have, look at the number of learners in grade 10, allow grade 10 and 11 to go through, but deal with those who are in grade 9 so that you are able to begin to put controls in place at grade 9 in order to be able to reduce the number of streams. Then the next thing, question was, KZN applies the necessary consequence management over staff who are found to be in breach of departmental codes and policies, duties and responsibilities, and bringing the department into disrepute. Here we are saying the department has policies in place that are applied to its employees in cases of breach of conduct. These are applicable to all personnel, whether educators or public service staff, but that's a given that we have to. And we have to make them account for whatever they do in line with government policies, in line with the existing prescripts, be it a person from public service staff or educators in terms of the Employment of Educators Act or Public Service Act. But it doesn't stop there. You have to conduct an induction program or development programs or programs that aim at building capacity into those personnel so that they are able to, at least if you ask them to account, they account on the basis of strength because they have been capacitated. They understand the content, the methodologies, the processes and procedures and so on and so on. We do this, but it's that one. Two, we have 12 districts in KZN. And each and every district director, at director level, has to develop its own plan based on this provincial academic improvement plan. And in those plans that are being developed at national, provincial, at the district level, they are aligned with the national provincial plan. But part of that is that there must be accountability from each and every manager on the work that is, on the responsibilities that are already in the provincial academic plan. So therefore, district director takes full responsibility to make sure that managers under him at district level account. Failure to do that, those become responsibilities of the province. So the question of accountability is captured in our policies, in our daily interaction, especially on the question of the delivery of programs, because failure to deliver programs in line with existing policies caused the department to act quickly and to make sure that the work a person is made to account. Then the next question is on the question of budget allocation. KZN PET reviews this budget allocation policy and criteria for learner transport and ensures that all qualifying learners benefited from learner transport program. Further to this, the department conducts a feasibility study of and considers alternatives to the planned acquisition of ferry boats for ferry learners to ferry learners across rivers during winter. The question of learner transport is a very difficult one, honorable members. I must admit, the demand is huge and it's beyond our comprehension ability. Financially, currently, it goes up to 600 million, if I may say this, that we have to sort of move our budget from 185 million, which is the current budget for learner transport in KZN. In fact, it has gone up to 195 million this year. It was 186 last year. Next year is 202 million. Upon checking on the demands, I then I've been confronted with one big problem. Learner transport in our department is not run by our by the Department of Education. It's run by the Department of Transport. Department of Transport has been managing this function for about 3 years now, if not four, but 3 years. What has emerged is that in 2016, because of the demand, the province, the Department of Education requested, added about 61 schools to the total number of 327 schools that are benefiting from the transport function. We have 327 schools that are benefiting from this function. But what happened in last year, because of demand, the Department of Transport was asked to add about 61 schools because of the pressure and pressure that were coming from rural schools. That changed our budget completely. From 186 million, it added a new amount of about 111 million. Now, we then took a decision that we are going to take over learner transport from Department of Transport. And the question is now, is the Department of Education going to be able to sustain that 186 plus 111 million? That came up as a result of the new rules that have been introduced because of the demands in the province. Now, the demands have gone far above what we have. It's now tripled, such that in each and every province, the district, we have to provide learner transport. That's one problem that we are facing. Secondly, there is a new demand that is created by the so-called transformation of the schooling system, where we have to close non-viable schools because of the fact that those schools don't have learners, especially in areas of Umzimkhulu, areas of, in fact, in the rural areas. If you close a non-viable school, you have to move learners into a neighboring school or a school that has capacity in terms of personnel, space, and so on, to accommodate those learners. But we have to provide transport for those learners to be moved from where they are into those new schools. Now, the demand is such that the transformation of the schooling system has to be, in order for it to succeed, we have to provide for learner transport. That's one. Provide for learner transport. Two, we have to provide either boarding facilities so that all those learners are put into one boarding facility. So the demand is huge, is that we have to provide ordinary learner transport and learner transport for learners who are no longer be able to be in their schools because of the fact that schools have become non-viable, have lost numbers. So it then makes us to feel a pressure financially. The last time I calculated the cost implications, it amounted to 600 million. From where I am, it's so hard. I'm sitting at 195 million less budget for learner transport. I've made an effort twice. I've written to Treasury provincially, requesting more funds from Treasury on the basis that we have to provide transport so that we are able to, on the day when we take over, because we are taking over learner transport from the Department of Transport come April 2018. And currently, we haven't been responded to in terms of whether we get more funds to take this over this function or not. But we do have an obligation to take over. So I'm saying the reason why other areas of the province are not being able to be provided with learner transport is because of this problem that we are sitting with. One, the cost implications, the financial constraints, that's one. Secondly, the fact that this problem of not being able to provide is running concurrently with the program called Transformation of the Schooling System, which also demands that we provide learner transport for those learners who are being moved from non-viable schools into neighboring schools. That's the second part, especially matric learners, where you can feel that these learners are not going to benefit, they're not going to sort of benefit from their schools. They have to be moved to local schools, so we have to provide. Now, on the question of as to why certain schools, especially in the area that you visited, why there hasn't been any budget allocation, I must admit, I don't want to be ambiguous on this one. I do have a financial constraint. But I've made a request to Treasury for us to get more funds so that we're able to expand this function so that to the benefit of these learners. That's one problem that we're facing. We are not seated, but we have made efforts. Even at the level of the Mincom Board, the subcommittee of cabinet, we presented we made the same presentation with Honorable Lemisi Lungwa, that for us to be able to run this function adequately to the benefit of the all 12 districts, we will need more funds, and we have made that effort. Secondly, as KZN, we realize that there are schools where learners are not being able to walk on food up to the level of reaching school premises. Those schools are a barrier in the form of having rivers or dams between the school and homes where these learners reside. Before my time, the department took a decision to introduce the so-called ferry boats. But before that, we conducted an investigation, sort of a research. We discovered that there are 181 schools in the province that are affected by the rivers. And one of them is at Kungumate. That's the biggest one in an area called Ovu. Forgetting the name. So the idea was that for these 81 schools with I don't know how many learners that are affected by this, but for these learners to be able to reach schools, let's provide ferry boats. We then started by buying about 8 ferry boats. 4 were delivered last year. As I'm talking now, 4 are being delivered now. There are 8 in total that we bought for about 8 schools. But the main thing is that all schools at the end must benefit. But we have soon realized that this is a slow program that is not going to be able to reach all schools within a short space of time. It can take 20 years, if not 15 years. Then we were then approached by Transport Department and Treasury that we must revisit the idea of the provision of ferry boats, and look at the possibility of one, those schools where there is a possibility of a bridge being constructed. We are looking into that. Secondly, we have soon realized that it was good that we started with 8 ferry boats. We have soon realized that it's going to be expensive to maintain these boats. So that it's better to outsource them, so that we don't take responsibility of sustaining their existence. So therefore, those are 2 possibilities. We are looking at the possibility of outsourcing them, because we don't have skippers to steer those boats. There is no maintenance program, and there are no expertise to sort of provide mechanical support. So therefore, it's better if it is outsourced. But where possible, we develop and build bridges where necessary. Because remember, there are 181 schools that are affected. So we've discussed that with Transport and Treasury, but the discussion is ongoing. We haven't concluded on this one, on these 2. But that's what we are discussing. I think it's important to say this, that the provision of ferry boats was a short-term solution. But we are hoping that we'll end up with a concrete solution at the end. That's where we are in terms of the learner transport. I first explained the reason why there is not adequate provision of transport. Secondly, the question of TSS. That is the management of the non-viable schools. And then the third issue is about ferry boats. I think I've explained those 3. Now I'm moving to the question of science teachers or science educators in KZN province, that KZN PED investigate ways and means
of attracting qualified and experienced mathematics and science educators in the province. Further to do this, that KZN conducts training and development programs to capacitate serving maths and science educators. We took this advice very seriously, and we respected this. Maths and science educators are very few, they are scarce, especially in areas that are outside the department, are outside the city areas. All rural districts are experiencing the problem of the fact that once they are employed, those with science and maths in their qualifications, they, after, in a year or within a year or within 6 months, they migrate into the city area and leave Umkhanyakude, leave areas of Unqutu, Inkandla, and other areas outside the province that are rural. They don't stay there. Some are coming through Funza Lushaga. Some are coming from other backgrounds, from universities. They become excited when they get employment, but they don't stay even 2-3 years in those areas. They leave. When they decide to leave, they leave a gap. That's why we are now strong on recruiting foreign nationals who have science and maths background, because they don't shortchange us. They stay there. They become assets. Those are the people that sometimes we rely on in far-flung areas like Umkhanyakude, Jozini, borders next to the borders of Mozambique. Because we are really struggling when it comes to those areas. But they're being recruited into those positions. They are given employment, coming from different backgrounds, from Funza Lushaga, from universities, but they don't spend much time in those posts. They simply move into Devon areas like Umlazi, Pine Town, Ilembe, and so on and so on. On the question of development, yes, that is a continuous program, a program that is continuous, because math, science, and any other subject need to be updated every now and then. So the program of developing teachers needs to be continuous, targeting both content knowledge and methodologies. That's what we normally do, especially in our department that is responsible for teacher development within the curriculum management and delivery branch in the department. That is being done and is being taken care of. But it targets specific areas where there is a need for development. On the question of local communities to discuss the ways and means of ensuring that schools have running water and electricity, there should also be engagement on the possible lowering of municipal tariffs for schools to lessen the burden of municipal debt of schools. Here we are having a serious problem that schools are not being able to pay for domestic accounts because of the subsidy that they receive from the department. That's just a huge problem. We end up at the department paying these accounts on our own. And we have approached COCTA to say to them that why can't you reduce these accounts? Because we are not a business organization. We need special tariffs or special rates as this department. But that's the discussion that is ongoing. There hasn't been any concurrence, any agreement between the Department of Education and COCTA on the possibility of lowering of the municipal tariffs for schools to lessen the burden of municipal debt of schools. Sometimes schools end up being without electricity, but as a department, we don't allow that. We come in and pay on their behalf. But I must admit that it's too expensive for schools to be able to pay for this. But the department providing full support. I know that at political level there is a discussion between the two departments to request that this matter be addressed and attended to. Then the next one towards the end, it says KZN to ensure that challenges faced regarding the SASM systems are adequately addressed. This one is ongoing. In fact, there has been an improvement in KZN and in the whole province. We are able to receive statistics now through the system of SASMs. I must admit, about 99.9% of our schools are on SASMs. although the not 100%, but when we are to, they are linked to our MS unit within the department, we're able to get statistics and other functions that support teaching and learning, including the delivery of curriculum and the submission of examination marks or, and so on, if they have been writing either half-yearly exams or quarterly tests. Those are now being received through SASEMS. We managed to conduct training last year. We're very strong in that, in almost all districts. But training on SASEMS mustn't be a once-off thing. It has to be ongoing because this thing keeps on, it's being updated on a monthly, quarterly basis or fortnightly basis. This system that is linked to LURIS. So I'm saying, although not all schools are on board on this one, but I must admit that from my take, DPE has made us proud by allowing colleagues to come to the province to support this program. And those are the one who provided training last year. They spent time providing training, and we have been able to provide resources to some of the, to almost, I don't know how many schools, that did not bring any statistics. But currently, if you want to know the number of learners that not have documents like IDs, like certificates, you are able to get into MS and access the particular school, get into the school enrollment, get into the school performance using the same system. So King Edward is part of the department, which I think is also at the same level as us. But I must admit that at the time of your visit, we're extremely poor. I must admit. It only improved after the intervention by DPE. And we have now improved because we had a very strong training. I think it's what Mr. Mbanza. We had a very strong training that we received, and we are now in a good state. KZN should investigate allegations that certain schools have not resulted learners for examinations written. Yes, it is true. We have provided a list of those schools, have provided learners, but I'm told that there are only two learners that decided, almost all of them have received results, except two learners that have taken us to court. We can't act now until we receive the decision of the court, as those two learners decided to deal with us legally. But the intervention also by Department of Education nationally, as well as the Umalusi, together with the province, were able to resolve most of this problem. At the time of your visit, it is true that certain learners did not have the results. Let me see. The last two, KZN should broaden and heighten its advocacy in respect of the processes, procedures, and advantages of the progression policy, as well as the second chance program for learners. King Kwayo only started very late. It was started in 2017. There were only two provinces that were targeted for the second chance program by DPE, funded by DPE, targeted by DPE, although other districts had to do this at a very low scale. But what we did, when I took over the department, I decided that all 12 districts be on board. So all 12 districts, including King Kwayo, from January 2017, are providing for the second chance program. They have to provide space, they have to provide anything to do with tuition, and they have to provide notes, study guides, and other resources that are required in order to support these learners who are coming into schools for tuition. So in all 12 districts, this is now in place. King Kwayo is part of those 12 districts. The district did, however, appoint we have district coordinators who are directly responsible for second chance program, and it's an obligation. It's not a luxury. We must make sure that learners who left school without matric certificates be accommodated and be made to write exams in June, some in November, after they have studied in those schools. So second chance program is in full force and is funded by the department. I think King Cetshwayo is on board as from January 2017, and I did not receive anything contrary that says that they're experiencing difficulties or problems. Although we did ask all 12 districts to sort of make sure that not even a single learner is left out, we also released a document in the form of a memorandum that talk about the modularization, that those learners who have been progressed be also given, because once you are progressed, sometimes you are not being able to write all 7 subjects because of the lack of capacity. We do that on the basis of your performance in the first quarter, which is the end of March, your second quarter, which is half-yearly exams, your third quarter, which is the trial exams. Once you realize that in all those 3 quarters, all those exams, 3 exams, they're still not performing at the required level, we are then obliged to talk to your parents, write to your parents, to engage you. There's a special form that we use for learners to then agree that instead of writing 7 subjects, they will write 4 or 3. But we normally ask them to write 4 subjects. Those that were, but you don't jump simply some thumbs up. You first look at the performance of the child from the beginning of the year. If that child was progressed in math, science, and economics, or math, science, and life sciences, or math, science, and computer applications technology, you have to study and make sure that the 3 subjects in which this child has progressed are the ones to be sort of put aside and ask the child to write those in the following year. That's why there are these guidelines to assist schools. In fact, we have strengthened this document. As I'm talking, we are meeting all district directors on Wednesday to also do the same for 2017, that to decide on the number of learners, progress learners, who are not going to write all 7 subjects out of 28,000 who are progressed in KZN. So that, but we don't do that applying force. It's guided by policies, it's guided by this framework, and it's also guided by the performance of the child from the beginning of the year. And we look at the first quarter result, which is March, June, and September trial exams. And then we guide and tell the parents that your child, even if she or he sits for all 7 subjects, this child is not going to make it. Rather, let's split it and modularize. That's why there are these documents that talk about modularization. So in this question, you have 2 questions. This is one that talks about second chance and modularization. It's covered here. I think the trial is part of that, and those learners are made to modularize. The last one is that the KZNPD should ensure urgent and immediate intervention, prioritization, and focused attention of the challenges faced by the following schools. Then the list of schools was given in the form of Zingobele Secondary, Nyakanya High School, Sonono Secondary School, Amazon Secondary School, and Scananda Primary School. We want to ensure that there are intervention, prioritization, and focused attention in those schools. I think these schools are being regarded as schools that are problematic schools, where there is evidence of instability in some of the schools. What we did as a department, we realized that there are a number of schools over and above these that are problematic. We then established a task team, a very strong task team in the province called a response team. It responds directly to specific problems. If there is a problem at Mnyaganya or Zibizeleni or any school, this task team goes there and stays there. If it has to stay there for the week, it does that. It targets the SMT, whether there is a problem facing SMT, problems facing the staff, problems facing the learners, problem that is coming from outside the school that is related to the community. Target that if the community has structures, also target those structures, SGPs as well, to make sure that the problem is identified. If it is community related, who in the community is bringing selling drugs here, doing this, interfering with teaching and learning, influencing learners, causing instability. If it is learner-related, they deal with that by talking to learner leadership. SMT, if it is the principal and financial mismanagement, the whole SMT, they deal with that, and they come up with recommendations. We have dealt with about close to 30 schools now, if not more, that have been identified, and they have been visited, and they have spent time in those schools providing intervention. Our findings is that in most of the time, principals are a problem. Either a principal mismanages funds. Once there is evidence, we remove him and conduct an investigation, subject that person to a hearing. Secondly, if there is evidence that there is an instability because of lack of leadership, we remove the principal. If there is evidence that the problem is within the staff, they are fighting one another, and the principal is not being able to provide leadership in terms of bringing stability, we then take a decision. And in other instances, we remove teachers and put them into other schools and bring new staff. So it's all about listening, investigating, focusing on the problems that are facing schools and prioritize those problems and provide intervention. So in the case of these schools that are listed here, I did not bring reports, but I think we have dealt with these schools in summary, in the form of using the same, for instance, Umnyakanya, Shonono, Zingobeleni. In fact, we have dealt with almost all of them, and I must stop here, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, HOD. You have broken the record.
My apologies.
You are the first presenter to ever present for 1 hour. But it's not a problem. We want you to account to the portfolio committee. In actual fact, you have done what we have really requested you to do in terms of giving us the report. So the members will confirm that with their questions. For clarity, comments. Honorable Khosa Ntshaisa, Honorable Bason, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Dr. Nzama, and for the presentation. Though really it was a long and detailed presentation, you might think that as you have been very detailed, we might not be having issues. They are there. The issues will always be there. Thank you very much for that presentation. Thank you. The first issue I wanted to raise to talk to is about Matamzana Dube High School, where in the funds for LTSM were amounting 184,851 was transferred into 2011. Then results said no textbook were purchased. Then going further, there was intervention. What I want to know is, too, while they were having that money, was that money not used for other things other than a textbook, which might lead to irregular expenditure? Or was that money just kept in the bank? Nothing was used about it. I would want to know that. The second issue I want to know is, are all the schools in the province being audited? If yes, what type of audit opinion do they get? And I think this maybe is the last one. No, it can't be. You know, you also have indicated the low allocation on the norms and standards, wherein schools are unable to pay municipal bills. But on allocation, I apologize before I say this because
provinces are unique. But what I know is that on allocation, municipal budget is being specified that this allocation is for municipal services. Then, I think if it is like that also in KZN, we need to advise the schools to use money where money is allocated for. Because you will agree with me, Doc, that municipalities also depend on payment of rates to be able to survive, to be able to be providing water, to be able to be providing electricity where in municipalities are doing such services. So if really we will take money for municipal services and erect a fence, I think it won't be right, because it means we won't be having water to cook in order to implement NSNP. So if they really are not doing that, let us go back and advise them. I've done that. I know I've done that. And even in 2-3 weeks ago, I did that to another school where they wrote me a letter to say, you know, we don't have water in the school. I went there and then sat down with the principal. I said, but you have that money. What you need to do, I'll assist you. We go to the municipality to they assist and connect water for you. There is water in the village, but you're failing to do that. While you have that money, so let's assist them to do the correct thing with the money, the little money that they're having, Doc. The little money. I'm not saying it's a lot of money. That little amount that they're having, let them do the correct thing.
Sure.
You. Lastly, this is the last one. Yes, you have been doing good in initiating the ferry boats. But my surprise is when the Department of Transport advises you to build bridges. It is not your competence. Had they come to me, I would have said to them, no, I am dealing with Scholar Transport. The boat that I have bought, it's Scholar Transport. With bridges, don't come to me. You know where to get to. You know where to get to. It is not your competency. That was the wrong advice. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. As you know, that I wasn't part of the oversight, but there are general issues that I would like to get clarity on. The issues that I picked up as you were presenting. The issue of the centralization of purchase of textbooks. You know, in my province, Eastern Cape, principals have been complaining about this, claiming that now there is corruption that is being involved there. People up there in the province, Bishop, so they would like to give this form of a tender to the people they like. My question is now, can't it be possible that we allow now the second manager to go to schools now under second managers? We allow the second managers to monitor these purchase of textbooks and the district directors so that now they are nearer and it is possible that they will check on that so that the schools or the principals that do not buy textbooks should be punished. So that is easier rather than now taking this far away from them. Perhaps now we'll get some of these complaints as we are going to be incorporated into KZN as Matadiela. Then we'll get these complaints now from Matadiel schools. Another thing, this system, this Peter Mokel model, you know, don't you, it has long been in existence because it's the one that is killing schools. That you look into the enrollment, then you forget about the streams. Can't you take an initiative as KZN, because they're a big province, and you are leading even somewhere for the conference, so you can decide. Can't you take an initiative?
Order, Honorable Chairperson.
Sorry, withdrawn.
Let's not.
Withdrawn. Sorry, Chairperson. It was just on a light. Can't you take initiative? That now, at least now, you sort of modern us, or you amend this model, because it doesn't assist really. Because there are subjects that have got to do it, but you look into the enrollment, then now you decide how many teachers should be there. Then other teachers, learners now just be left without teachers. Then lastly, the learner transport. Which is the better one, between closing down the schools that are not viable or transporting learners to other schools financially, when you compare this, the financial implications, which is the better one? Sometimes you've got to close down the school or you've got to transport, of which they're complaining we don't have budget for that. So can you check now? Do we ever compare and check which is the better one? Thank you very much.
Honorable Vasson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Doc, thank you for your comprehensive presentation. It was comprehensive and inclusive and broad enough, of which we appreciate. I even appreciate when you say the findings of the committee. You were not just confined on the schools that were mentioned. You took it broader to other schools, because next day maybe we will go to other schools, not those that we were. So I appreciate that. But what I was waiting also for in your presentation, when taking it global, but to be specific to the schools that we identified problems. You know, it was surprising when we were at Bizimali High School, a good school, rural school, and this school produced so good results that I'm sure two of the learners there were amongst the top 10 or top 20 learners. Now this school is struggling. Number one, the building is there. You built the building. But the building is unused because you didn't supply furniture. I just wanted to know, have you supplied furniture to the school to make things easier for the principal and the SMT to be able to distribute the learners? This school was overcrowded. As I say, this school is in demand and is receiving learners from all directions, even outside the country as well. And with this school, as you were speaking about ferries and bridges, there's a river that is dividing the community when you go to the school. And they reported that it's so difficult for learners to come, even for educators who are staying on the other side of the river, to come to school on rainy days. Can't you prioritize when I don't think for that river a ferry is needing. Just take an intergovernmental program, as Honorable Kosa has said, building bridges is not your competency, but just take it with the relevant department just to build a bridge. It doesn't even need that high bridge, that river, to be able for the teachers and for the learners to come to school on rainy days. And another school that was of that high light was Chief Ngonyama Technical School, Chief Ngonyama Technical School, is such a beautiful school with dedicated staff. But the department doesn't support them adequately. This school, because it is the only type of a school in the area whereby it's giving the technical subjects. So it's not about school of choice for learners to come from far for this school. And that learners are traveling, I'm on learner transport for this school, are traveling. There were others that they said that it's even more than 10 kilometers that they travel to the school amongst the bushes and the what and what and what and what. I thought that this one we wanted a specific response on that. Have you solved the problem of that school, the transport, and then as compared again now to that, there was a school, Isifiso Sethu, that was also without a teacher, I mean a principal. The school is vandalized, and no maths teacher, and the principal was just speaking as if he's so nervous and afraid even of the learners. The principal who came for us that day, who said he came just to give us the presentation. So that those were the schools that we found them that we need a specific response. Honorable Chaisa spoke about PPN, of which you mentioned that learners, I mean enrollment informs the number of teachers, of which is true. Now, you find a small school like Isifiso Sethu having 222 learners, but giving all the streams, how can you assist such schools that you know you get the teachers because of the number of enrollment? So cut your streams so that you can be able to accommodate. So I thought that we will take our recommendations as we were specifying the schools where we found, although I appreciate the inclusive approach you used. On foreign educators, recruitment on foreign educators, of which it is very good. But I would like to know, as much as we need them, they also need us. And how do we make sure that the teachers we get from outside countries are the qualified teachers with clean screening audit? Because I'm speaking about this because in Northern Cape we have an experience. I'm sure you heard about educators impregnating so many learners and so on and so on. Some of them were the foreign teachers, of which when the case is on, some will just vanish because they have been suspended and go back home without following the case. How do you recruit them? Because the excitement can be just we got the teachers that have skills. How do you recruit them or make sure that they have no behavioral records. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Member. I have a few questions just to appreciate the report as well and the efforts that have been put in place to try and correct some of the challenges and weaknesses that were identified. We, for that matter, want to commend the department for even, you know, availing the funds to attend to some of the things that emerged from that oversight, particularly the issue of learner transport, where we saw the department was setting an extra 10 million to address the Okay, thank you very much. But the issues that I wanted to check relate to the issue of the interventions, particularly on issues like leadership and governance structures, because that is always a burning issue. In the reports that we receive in the portfolio committee, we always get that report, and even ourselves, there are many instances where when we do oversight, we come across issues of poor leadership and governance, and not necessarily saying that the structures are not there, the structures are in place, but either lacking the support or the capacity to fully, you know, to execute the mandate. So I just wanted to check how far did your intervention go in terms of making sure that, you know, you turn around the situation. And so far, what is the status quo in those schools? You told us that things have changed, but how far have they changed from that time? And then the other thing is the issue of social cohesion. And I'm sure you are from, like, I know that all of us, we understand that your province is very rural and it has got a lot of, you know, issues of culture, tradition, you know, always emerging once in a while. But in many instances, you find that they always clash with what we want to achieve in schools, which we observed when we visited one of the schools there, where learners were, like, they were told that if, when you are 20 years and a young girl and you don't have a child, they write you off. When you are a young man and you don't drink, you don't go to the muketis in the weekends, like, they are encouraged by the society, and then it relates to issues of dropouts. By the learners, because by the weekend they are adults, during the week they are learners. And like, how have you intervened on that issue? Because it seems to interfere with your core mandate. What are the programs that are in place? That example is a typical example of what we had during the same oversight. And then the other point relates to the issue of lack of facilities for sports. Bizimali, they say that the learners, they recreate through books. They recreate with books. In the morning, in the afternoon, at night, they go home at 10 o'clock. So the teachers also, they recreate through books. That is why the school is, you know, top achieving. but they also want to play. They said they don't have a sporting facility. So I, and many of the schools in the rural area did not have those facilities. I didn't hear you talk to that. And then the other point that I wanted to raise is that also during that oversight, there was the issue of boarding schools that was talked to in that oversight as an option to, because at that time it seems as if the province had not fully concluded the decision on the ferry boats. And then it was the ferry boats, the boarding schools and other means. But I just wanted to check, because all the time we have been paying a close attention with the Department of Basic Education Infrastructure to check if really issues of boarding schools will come up in the budget. And you know, I become encouraged when you say that you are even looking at reviewing your decision of the ferries. So I just wanted to check what are the possibilities for you to consider boarding schools for the learners in order to alleviate some of the possible risks that can happen within the ferries and other things that you have talked to. I think generally, I want to appreciate the depth of the report. Those are my few questions. Thank you very much. They respond.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Let me first appreciate the questions and also comments and advices, because I look at some of them as being given an advice on other issues, areas. Let me start with, I think I managed to write all of them. There's a question of Matamzana and its allocation of over 400,000, whether it appears in the school books, and whether there is any purchase being made by the school itself. And I would go further and say whether there has been any audit. With Matamzana and its finances, I must admit, there are a number of discrepancies that we have uncovered or discovered. Financial management, that school is not up to scratch. As a result, as I'm talking right now, the district has launched an investigation into how funds are used, how funds are managed. The tendency here is to rob Paul to pay Tom. That the money that is being allocated for this or for that is not used for what is meant for. And Matamzana is a culprit in this regard. As a result, because of the size of the problem at Matamzana, I remember that I signed a letter appointing accredited auditors to audit the whole school, so that we get a picture on where the whole school is standing in terms of its, in terms of the financial management capacity. I haven't seen the report as yet, because they have first sent a task team that revealed that there is evidence of financial mismanagement. Honorable Member, I must admit that the problem is not a small one in that school. And if I'm asked to present that report, the findings of the auditors, I will do that. But the investigation has been started in order to establish facts at Matamzana. on how the money is spent, whether they purchase stationary textbooks or they pay school accounts, domestic accounts and all that. I would like to, that's what we want to establish. So I'm admitting that there is a problem at Batamzan, but we have started an investigation. I think the report will be available in the near future. And that all schools are being audited, and what type of report do we receive? One, they are not at the same level. There are schools that are audited by accredited auditors who have authority to conduct audit and whose annual financial statements are accurate. But there are schools that don't submit annual financial statements, to the extent that not all of them. We have removed powers and authority to control finances in some of the schools and put that and give that to circuit managers and district offices, so that if they want to utilize, then appoint a small team to take full control of the finances of those schools that do not submit AFS. Some 2 years, some 3 years. So that's two. Three, there are audit statements that get received by the department that are not at a good standard. I must admit, and not all schools produce quality assured audit statements. They vary. Remember the size of the province. We have 6,200 schools. So what we have done, we took a decision at the level of the minister's meeting that going forward, we are going to centralize this audit processes, or audit program, by appointing at least 10 accredited auditors, if not 10 or 20, depending on the size of the district. Appoint those accredited auditors, including, yes, so that the fly-by-night auditors are removed completely. And we channel the whole district to say, this is the list of auditors your schools are going to use. District B, this is in almost all 12 districts, so that even if there is a need for us to conduct an investigation, we utilize the same auditors, and the same auditors will be able to issue statements as quickly as possible and to alert the department if there is any financial mismanagement. That has been the decision that has been taken. It's being actioned now. I know there's going to be a resistance in some of the schools, whether black or white, but we're going to implement this decision, because there is a tendency of using one and the same audit firm for 10, 12 years, 20 years in some instances. And there is a tendency of using those that are not adequately qualified to conduct audits in some schools. So therefore, because of these discrepancies, we took a decision that we're going to centralize, identify, appoint, locate that this 10 belong, or 20 or 12 or 8 belong to this district. If your auditors are outside this team, we're not going to accept that audit report. So that therefore, this is being corrected as in the province. Actually, I've already had a meeting with qualified CAs in the province to discuss this one. Where they all agreed that in the case we are, we also have to negotiate the sort of the payments, the funds, because, or rates, because they are too expensive. But it looks as if I'm going to win, because they're also looking for this work, type of work. All I'm saying is that for us, for not being able to get accredited AFS, and also to stop this financial mismanagement in schools, and all these financial statements that are not authentic and the quality assured, we are introducing this idea of centralizing audit program or processes in the department. It hasn't been introduced, but the discussion and the engagement with the auditors have started. And I'm hoping that in 2018, the department is going to introduce this program. Of centralizing this audit program. An allocation is meant for allocation, whenever it's made to a school, it's meant for various categories. It's an allocation of budget for municipalities, specified and let schools be advised to use the money for what is meant. I take this. It is true, they specified. But maybe what we have not done is to issue a circular to schools to enforce this one. To say whoever is deviating from what we have allocated and use the money for something else, we will make that person account. So I take this as a very strong advice. On the basis of this occurrence, I want to commit that we are going to issue a circular to schools, because we do have a problem of schools that are not paying domestic accounts, especially small schools. But sometimes they don't afford. It's because they don't want to do it. Once they save the money, it's kept or is utilized for something else. But I want honorable member to take this point and run with it, so that I advise schools in writing, so that when I take them to account for not doing this, at least there's evidence that this matter was communicated. I want to take this one. Ferry boats doing good, but wrong advice, honorable member. This advice came not from the Department of Transport alone, also from Treasury, who was worried about the fact that in the case we keep on buying ferry boats and we are not being able to sustain them, what then will be the consequences? Then Transport said, no, I think our problem as Transport is that we can't prioritize bridges for schools because there is no budget allocation. But we can prioritize some of those bridges. Look into that. Let's develop a program. Let's look at it. Let's resolve and seek a mandate to do it. I must admit that, yes, it's not our responsibility. It's not our mandate. For support. And we want to prioritize those schools. But Transport has a buy-in in the program, and we want to Transport to lead this one because they have a mandate. And I must admit that honorable member is correct in this one. Let me move to the second the questions that came from that side. Centralization of textbook. Is it possible for circuit managers to monitor? Hey, we tried this one to decentralize the purchasing of books. But KZN has been successful because at the end of November, in each year, we guarantee that the delivery of textbooks is at 100% and stationary. We do have a management agent that has been servicing the department all these years. But currently, even last year, we were able to deliver 100%. The problem why other schools don't have books is not because of the failure to deliver. It's because of the allocation. It's not adequate. You allocate, the allocation is in threefold. 100% allocation, even if it is 120,000, 40% is for textbooks, 30% is for stationery, 30% is for other LTSM, which means other includes furniture, library books, library materials, chalkboards, stationery. It's not enough. You allocate me 120,000 or 200,000. You want me to buy textbooks. But normally they don't buy it. It's a top-up because they already have a textbooks. Or almost on a yearly basis, they buy textbooks. I always say, don't buy top-up. Look at what you have and then spend spend as economical as possible, because you're not buying books for the first time. So sometimes I must admit, honorable members, I'm saying this with respect. You know, we don't have principals in some of the schools. We don't. Hey, principalship is a very strong position for one to provide strong leadership. I've been a principal myself in Wamash. You have to provide strong leadership in terms of planning, governance, everything. They just leave things to fall apart. Then later on, it's the department that needs to account. But yes, we have a manager there that is directly responsible. In this context, they don't enforce this retrieval policy. Then the following year, books for life orientation, for life sciences, physical sciences, mathematics, grade 11, either they are short of 20 books or 30 books, or they are not there. They were never brought back after learners had written exams. Now they have to buy books again, the books that they purchased previous years, and there's not leadership. That's where the problem is. So it ends up not having adequate or enough money to sustain this function. Honorable member, I must admit that with the current managing agent that we have in the KZN, we are able to get a lot of discount in terms of textbooks. I can reveal that instead of spending close to half a billion, we are spending only 324 million. There is a saving, because if you pay within 30 days, and you get discount. If you and we work directly with the managing agent. Secondly, if you are to negotiate with the publishers themselves, I was part and parcel of those negotiations at the time when I was TDG curriculum. I made a lot of money in the form of savings, because you promise that I'm going to pay within a short space of time, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do, and they give you discounts. But it goes with one thing, that all what we buy and supply to schools comes directly from principals, because they are the ones who get hold of the catalogs and make decisions in terms of choices against what they have and so on. So I really feel that we have been doing well in this area, but maybe in future, if the department decides otherwise, it will be sort of a new mandate that we maybe follow this. But we have tried, if we are to transfer money to districts and ask districts to purchase books, it would be a chaos. We also have tried it with NSNP. We ended up in courts. So we then decided that, no, let's centralize procurement. Let's centralize NSNP. Let's centralize business, so that it's the district and head office. It doesn't go beyond that. It doesn't go down to the level of circuit management and schools, because sometimes it becomes hard to monitor at that level. For my answer cannot be a straightforward answer in this context, because it all depends on the context. In case that there is a value for money in the use of the managing agent currently. But not all schools. The schools that are not purchasing books are Section 21 schools with C status. Their budget is 535 million. In any model C school, you will never find a school purchasing books. X ratio, they don't do that. Instead, they ask parents to do that. I don't know what they do with the money. I even said to the MEC, man, let us not transfer this money and wait for them to take us to court, because I don't understand. Because they have larger enrollments at 1,500, 1,300. So their budget allocation in terms of norms and standards is huge, but they end up not budgeting. Instead, they ask parents to buy books on their own. So that's a serious, serious problem, which I think will need our attention. Either we rechannel the money into those schools that are needy, instead of putting money into one hole that is not fully utilized to the benefit of our learners. Centralization of textbooks, yes, I've done this. Peter Mokel model, honorable member, let me admit that there's been discussions at national level on the Peter Mokel model. I don't know how far these discussions are now, but I know that they are at the level of Education Labor Relations Council. I'm not clear as to... but there hasn't been any discussion at the level of HEDCOM where we sit. May I not get into this in detail? I don't. Learner transport, closing down schools, that are comparative analysis between learner transport and boarding facility, they are both viable. You build hostels, it's a very good facility, and it's in the pipeline. In our discussions and planning, financial planning, including the closure of non-viable schools, we want to build hostels. Already there is a hostel facility that we have identified. I mean, the building of a new hostel, Atom Zimkulu, a huge hostel that's going to be built there, where we want to put about 10 schools into that facility. The budget, everything is there, but it's commencing, I don't know when, because they have been busy with plans. We have started thinking along those lines, that instead of providing learner transport, we build hostels. But it's going to be incremental, because it's expensive. We are targeting Zimkulu for now. because that's where there have been lots of muddy schools and smaller non-viable schools. So that's where we are as a department. Also replacing the muddy schools and so on. But there is a hostel facility that is being built there, although it hasn't started, but I know geotech testing and all those things have been done. I don't know where the process is now, but I know that there's been a budget for that. But also the provision of land transport is also important, where there is no need for us to build hostels. So we want to test both simultaneously. Where there is a chance, you know, of providing transport and there are funds available, we'll do so, and we are going to do that. In fact, we are currently revising our routes because we are taking over from Department of Transport, and we decided to revise our routes before we advertise a new bid so that we have new routes, because there are schools that have been removed or closed down, and we are removing transport from those schools. We are sort of transferring transport to other schools. So there is a lot of revision that is being done, working with all 12 districts. Very soon, we'll announce the new routes, as we are advertising a new bid in preparation for the taking over in April 2018. So on the question of learner transport and hostels, they are both important in my view, and we want to tackle both. But they are both expensive, whatever we do is going to be incremental. I would love to have the budget, learner transport being increased, because communities want learner transport now. And you feel bad to see a learner walking over 3 kilometers from home to school. But the constraint is only on the funding. I've said to the MSC, if possible, make a lot of noise at the legislature and wherever you see it, so that we get more money and we double this money, because next year is only 202. If at least you can move to 400 million, it can relieve the pressures that are there. So the Honourable Member spoke about specific schools that we did not get into specifics. A building is unused because we did not supply furniture. I think Honourable Member, this furniture has been supplied now. Mamkina made a lot of noise until I succumbed to her pressure. So that has been done. Sometimes the failure to supply furniture is not on the side of the school, because we allocate budget 25-30% to a school for norms and standards, would purchase furniture as well, and principal will just stay and leave that money untouched. But that has been attended to. The school is overcrowded, I agree. There is a river still on the same school. Learners to reach school take to. On the question of learner transport in relation to this school, I cannot lie. I want to check with the district director, Mr. Tot, if this, as we are revising the routes, if this is not part of the new routes. I don't have the detail on this one. Chief Mvonyama, yes. I think you are correct. This is the only technical high school in that area where a number of learners converge. It does need support. Let me not lie, I'm not sure whether in the process of revising routes this has been made part of. If it is not, I'm going to ask the district director to make this one part of the. Yes, I can't talk anymore. And we'll report back on the progress. This is Fiso Setu. Let me check my notes here, which is if you so say too. Oh, I remember now. Yes. Thank you. I'm aware that there is a problem at Sifiso City after my engagement with the district director, where he was complaining that it has become a no-go area. Now, I'm just checking with my colleague here if our task team did not visit the school. I think they did. It's just that I don't have a report unless I make a call to check with the chairperson of the task team.
Can
yes,
I intervene then?
We'll
request you to supply us with a report,
thank you,
a comprehensive report on that one.
On
yes, so that we don't, you know, guess your response.
Okay. We will confirm if the principal has been appointed, if there are, yeah, but we'll give a status report on the Sifiso City. Thank you very much for that intervention. The PPN enrollment informed the number of learners cut down. Now, what happened in brief in relation to small and non-viable schools, we realized as a province that smaller schools are not being able to get capacitated and supplied with adequate teachers. The NMEC ruled that in each and every non-viable school, let's add one or two teachers over and above the PPN. If the PPN is four or five, add another two to make seven so that we accommodate the curriculum needs of the school. We have done that as a department. Although it was costly, but we have to do it. So that has been taken care of. That's one. That was the first thing. Secondly, where there was also a request that we provide more educators, but we've realized that even the quality of teaching was not up to scratch. We moved learners, grade 12, from those schools into the neighboring schools where there's evidence of strong teaching, quality teaching, good performance. So we've done our homework, and I don't know how many schools that have been affected by this, but I know a number of schools have been supplied with extra teachers to sort of to deal with issue of non-viability, especially those small with small enrollment. That has been taken care of. Foreign educators, how do we ensure that foreign teachers are adequately qualified and whether they are sort of authenticated as they get recruited into the program? We have a unit in HR called the Responsible for Vetting. Those are the people who, before a file, because there's only one person that approves the appointment of a foreign teacher, is the head of department, no one else. So the recommendation comes directly from the district director, second district director. District director has to conduct his own investigation, and it goes to HR at head office for vetting. I'm aware that they do a lot of vetting, but our mistakes can happen when they get, but I'm sure that with the kind of program, yeah, vetting of newly appointed educators, including foreign nationals, we are in on top of things to make sure that these teachers. But in the case there comes with a foreign national comes with fake qualifications, it's so hard to be sure if those qualifications are fake or not. But we do everything possible to contact Israel Agubo and establish if this person does not have records and so on. But they are appointed on a temporal basis, get terminated at the end of each year, reappointed the following year and so on. The question that came from the chairperson, extra 10 million rands, yes. Intervention, leadership and governance. I cannot 100% say yes, but we are doing our level best to provide training on leadership and also training of SGPs so that they are able to provide clean governance. But I cannot say 100% where we have clean governance in schools, no. Because every now and then we have cases of financial mismanagement. Sometimes that includes governing bodies, members as well, chairperson of the governing bodies. But we do provide a capacity building program that is ongoing, targeting leadership skills, issues of governance and so on, because of the poor governance that exists in schools. And it becomes our responsibility to make sure that intervention is ongoing, is continuous, and is provided on an ongoing basis. The status quo is that, if I have to put this, define the status quo, we do have strong and weak principals who are capable of providing leadership, deputy principals who are weak and strong, governing bodies that are weak and strong. So it's difficult to quantify and say this is the status of the province. Where we are able to identify a gap in a school, a gap in the form of a governing board that is not fully functional, we investigate, establish facts. If there is evidence that the governing body is weak because of the infighting and other problems, we withdraw functions and ask for new members to be re-elected and so on and so on. Or we provide capacity building program, depending on the context and the problems that the school is facing. But with principals, we have developed a new thing now, that if the principal is not performing, we remove him from the school. Especially, we had a principal in one of the beautiful schools at Stang, I Chief Administrator, secondary school. I was forced to say, remove this person, put a new person from outside, take a deputy principal from a good school and put him here. And the school changed. So we do look at each school and look at the problem, isolate it, deal with it, and so on. Social cohesion, KZN is very strong in culture and traditions. Yeah, it is, but we have a problem of high learner pregnancy rate in KZN. Very high. We do have a problem of dropouts, but what we have as a department is a program called My Life, My Future. My Life, My Future program targets girl learners at the very early age, teaching them about how to behave. Because all what you said is correct in saying that they sometimes become mothers at a very early age, young age. Some become parents, and during weekends they are different, they are no longer learners. Sometimes, I even said in one of the addressing ladies and mothers at the parliament, Women's Parliament. I said, but people are letting us down, our mothers. A child becomes pregnant, impregnated by the teacher. Then the mother will receive the money and says, those are problems that we are facing. But all I'm saying is that currently there is a problem of young girls that get pregnant, impregnated. We deal with that. We allow them to come back to schools. Those that they also being provided a very good program called My Future, My Life, where they are taught on the way of behavior as to how they are expected to behave. And there's a lot of engagement in the form of peer groups, and that is managed by a unit called HIV Strong AIDS unit. It's a directorate in the department. It goes the whole province, and it has opened its committees in almost, youth committees in almost all districts. Engagement and collaborations are taking place at those levels. But the program called My Life, My Future seems to be succeeding. It's the only program that we have, and other programs, and so on. So the question of sports, that there is lack of facilities for sports and areas of recreation, I must admit we do lack on that. We are very weak on that one. But the recent agreement that we have signed with the Department of Sports in the province, sports and recreation, seem to be assisting, because that's where we are benefiting from that agreement. But currently, there are a number of schools that are without sports and sporting facilities. But we do have sports. But schools in the African communities, especially in the rural areas, are the ones that are not 100% benefiting because they don't have sports facilities. That's the method that we have to look at. Thank you. I think of boarding facilities, whether they will come out of the budget, what are the possibilities. I think I explained myself here that we are also on board in terms of building boarding schools. But on the question of learner transport, we strengthen our position. And when it comes to ferry boats, it was a good idea for us to do a pilot. So we know now where we stand. We'll continue with the ferry boats on a very slow basis, but the discussions on the possibility of strengthening the question of bridges and other means, including outsourcing, will also be part of the discussion going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, HOD. Members, do you have follow-up questions based on the responses?
Chairperson, can I check on this? HOD, I heard you saying now if a principal does not perform, then you simply remove that teacher principal, then you put another one. Is it not a process that is appointing of principals and other educators? Is it not a process that has got to start from school SGB, then to finish off in your office by the province? You simply just remove the person, you know, what is it that you do? Can I get carried on that?
Okay, you can respond.
Yes, thank you very much. The removal of a principal is a process. I just gave a summary. It's a process depending on the problem that has been identified. Right now, we have principals who are performing between 0 and 10%, and we have to adhere to the prescript that we have been performing for 5 years. So there is policy there to deal with that. So it is a process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nzama. Mr. Mpanza, thank you very much. In closing, we would like you to pay special attention to the issue of the circuit managers and the district managers, because all these things boils back to the type of support and monitoring that they do in the schools. So I don't want to say a lot.